So, is there anything that you've noticed or experienced so far, or that came up in the little group, or when you're at home reflecting, that you feel like sharing, or any questions that you've got for me or Maitri Pushpa? There's a bit of space for that before we get down to some more practice. Well, that is part of our practice, isn't it? Yeah. So, if you'd like to, put up a virtual hand if you know how to do that. Along the bottom of your screen, probably there's a thing called reactions, and you can do a virtual hand, or you can put your actual hand up. But because I can't see all the boxes, I might not see it, but hopefully someone will see it. I think if you put your hand up, then you would go so I could see you. So, anyone want to? Okay, Louise, just unmute yourself and go for it.
Yeah. Hi. I guess what I got to thinking about over the last sort of couple of sessions is this idea of rhythm, and how Maitri Pushpa was talking about the rhythm of the seasons and not having that rhythm where she lived in Australia for a while. And I thought about how this practice really for me helps to restore a kind of broken rhythm. Somehow it helps me to reset the system a bit and slow down. I'm quite a fast person. And I think of thinking of babies in the womb, that they hear the mother's heart. And it's a rhythm from the very, very beginning. And I just think that's so fundamental personally to life as human beings on this planet, is we orientate towards a sort of stable rhythm. And I think that this practice really works to reconnect us to that feeling that I think a lot of us feel like, well, I feel I've lost along the way somewhere. But that's my thoughts anyway.
Very interesting. Yes, I think I can resonate a lot with that. And that sense of a rhythm to your life, and a rhythm just even to your day, but also when we stop, and maybe when we meditate, we can connect to the rhythm of our breathing, and as you say, a reset in the body sometimes, which is very easy if you're getting very busy in activities to override and ignore. So just creating that space and opening to it, that can be one of the things that emerges, isn't it? Reconnecting. Thanks, Louise.
I just thought, what was that song? The rhythm of life is a powerful beat. She just reminded me of it. I can't remember the rest of the words.
I don't know that song.
Has it
Who
come
was
from
that?
some musical or from way back? Rhythm
Yeah,
of
it's a
life.
musical. It's probably most famously sung by Sammy Davis Jr. The rhythm of life is a powerful beat.
That's the
Makes you
only
click your
line.
fingers, makes you move your feet, hit the
Oh.
floor and crawl to daddy. From
Oh,
Sweet
perfect.
Charity.
Sweet
Sorry.
charity. No, well done for remembering. Thank you. That was just going round in my head. That was a long time ago. I saw
Thanks,
the
folks. Okay. So, do you want to say anything about why that was coming, or what that resonance or symbolizes for you?
Oh, I was just following on from what Louise was saying, that our body is really part of rhythm, and it really wants to move in rhythm. And then there are lots of reverberations of rhythm, like the outer one was the nature one, but the rhythm of life moving is really in your body. And if you see tiny little kids that have hardly stood on their legs at about 10 months or a year, if there's music going, they're moving and dancing to it just naturally without ever having to learn or watch anybody dancing. It's wonderful to see that. So I think it comes from the inside, reverberates around in all sorts of ways and goes right out to nature and then the cosmos, of course, the way the sun keeps going round and the moon. It's a sort of constant rhythm. And when I actually the other thing is, I was out in Guatemala when there was a very big volcano that's nearby in Antigua was spilling out, and apart from the ash that came in the morning or seeing all the amazing fire, it had a rhythmic beat coming from the mountain that reverberated around in your chest, a bit like African war drums that you hear about. And it just beats inside. And I've never, other than the roar of a lion really close, that kind of beats inside your chest as well. But that volcano experience was amazing. For it was like the rhythm of a beating heart coming from very deep in the earth. Sorry, it was a whole train of thought there. I finished.
No, thank you for sharing that. Sounds awesome. And going back to the babies, well, your babies do hear mother's heartbeat and they hear everything, I think, around them. I know, because I'm a musician and I used to be a professional musician, and friends who like had babies, like the babies would recognize instruments or pieces of music once they were born, which I always found quite fascinating. Or even other friends, you know, if they'd been listening to certain pieces of music during their pregnancy, sometimes when the babies were sort of disturbed and they put that piece of music on, they just calm right down, you know. So yeah, but yes, thank you very much, Sue.
Penny,
In our group we talked a bit about our struggle with just being, and I know, you know, certainly for me that's hard. And it's interesting, very interesting, thinking and talking about rhythm, which seems to be internal and come quite naturally, but just being, I find that very difficult. Why isn't that easier and more natural? Why am I always doing, doing, doing? And any more ideas about how one can move into just being?
Well, I think that's a very interesting question, and maybe coming on a retreat like this is one way of moving into that. I think creating space, because I think if we're in doing mode, we can be active in the world, but we can also be very active in our minds, you know, even if we're sitting still. And I think there is a letting go with that. There is a surrendering. Because often when we're doing, we're wanting a particular outcome. Yeah.
Yes. So
if we can allow ourselves to be open to not knowing and not having an outcome, often we'll bring our habits and patterns of how we approach life into our spiritual practice and into our meditation practice. And they're different things, actually. And sometimes that letting go, that not knowing, that just being open to whatever emerges, it's a challenging practice, but that's what we need to do, particularly if we are someone that's very active and in doing mode a lot. So I would just give yourselves those opportunities to have a bit of space and just see. And we often have, you know, we're talking about change and impermanence. And I know for me, one of the things that was so significant when I first heard the Dharma was it made me realize that change was possible, that I had a sense of agency in the world, and that I couldn't change everything around me, I couldn't change everything that happened to me, but I did have some sense of agency in changing some of the conditions and how I responded to them, you know, and that really created a sense of freedom. And I guess everything I've done since has been in that mode, yeah. But I think we can often think we're on a journey of self-development or healing or on a spiritual journey, and there's that sense that rather than be who we are now, there's this place where we should get to, you know, and that we're always constantly wanting to improve ourselves or transform ourselves, yeah, to become awakened, enlightened, whatever it might be, yeah. And I think paradoxically, before we can do any of that, we just have to be with who we are, how we are right now, however messy, however imperfect and flawed it is, and allow ourselves to accept that, allow ourselves to be who we actually are, you know, and align ourselves with our present reality, not what we want to be.
Mm.
You know, so I would encourage everybody on this retreat to allow yourselves not to make any progress whatsoever over this weekend. Yeah.
The great invitation. Thank you, Bodhilila.
Okay.
Could I just add a little bit to that? I really, appreciated that question as well, Penny. And it's an ongoing query for myself. But I think one thing is sometimes, you know, we talk about things like just sitting or just being. And that implies that whatever it is we're talking about is easy. Just sit, just be. Hey, it's not just easy. It's not. But, and sometimes the just being just means doing one thing at a time. And that can be that, you know, so you're halfway there in form of, you're just, like right now, I don't know what's happening outside of your box, Penny, but it seems like you are engaged in the retreat and you're listening. That's great. That's just doing one thing at a time. It doesn't mean your mind isn't saying, oh, well, what about this? And having a conversation about that. But staying with one thing relatively, that's moving towards just being with one thing. So it's all a spectrum, really, that just being as well. So I just wanted to add that into Bodhilila's invitation to not think we have to fix or transform ourselves equally. We don't have to just be in one place.
Very helpful. Thank you.
Mm.
Thank you, Maitra Pushpa.
And I know you're interested in writing, aren't you? I'm thinking of a line from a T.S. Eliot poem, which always resonated for me, so I suppose that's why it's in my head. A state of complete simplicity costing no less than everything.
Oh, yes.
Because, you know, getting to, it is much harder to be simple, isn't it? You know, people can write all these really complex stories or articles or essays or stuff, but someone who can write something very simple in easy words with a lot of clarity, you know, quite concisely, that's a real art, isn't it? A real skill. And I think for me, some of my practices is much about letting go of things and uncovering and discovering stuff, you know, like peeling an onion or something. So rather than like doing more and more study and all that kind of stuff, sometimes it's just being with what is and then seeing what's there. Harpreet.
Yes, I just want to follow on from what Penny was saying. It's something that we discussed in the group, just about the being and not doing. And as a mum, I've just spent so many years doing, you know, and I think we're, as quite often as women, we're just told that we are so good at multitasking and men aren't, that women are superior at multitasking. And to be honest, I don't think that we are really any better. And I just think that we've been fed this false sort of fallacy that we should be good at doing so many things at the same time. And I just think that, along with kind of society's expectations of us doing so much, we've kind of just ended up on this hamster wheel, haven't we? And I have spent quite some time over the past couple of years just, I think, being quite rebellious about my to-do list, just thinking, actually, I'm only going to do what I absolutely have to do today. Because I think that there are quite often a lot of things that we feel that we should do, but we don't really have to do. So that's something that's really helped me kind of like just tick a few things off my to-do list, really, which I have found, to be quite helpful in terms of doing a lot more being after years of just doing so much doing, really. I think we have to really just be conscious of what absolutely needs to be done, and quite often as opposed to what we feel we should do. I just wanted to add that in.
Mm. Well, I think that's very helpful, Harpreet. And actually, I imagine being around kids, you know, particularly when they're really young, they just sometimes are in a complete state of being, aren't they? And just responding and being receptive, and we can learn quite a lot from them. But I think it is a practice, because we get into the habits of doing, and then we're not even aware that's what we're doing sometimes, or we are, but we don't know how to get out of it. So I think sometimes we do have to consciously create that space.
I think that's where this idea of reflection again can be helpful. Of, you know, I like the rebellious around the to-do list is questioning, just like in that poem. Do you need to clear out that kitchen drawer? Did you need to do those 5 things on the list? What really needs to happen, either for ourselves or for other people, not just one or the other? And that starts to maybe open up some of the scripts that are in our head, or voices that we hear that say you should, whether it's multitasking or whatnot. I was recently on holiday with my sister, who's somebody, when she travels, she'll spend 2 days in one city, 2 days in another city, 2 days in another city, and I find that exhausting. And this time she said, because my partner and I spent about 3 or 4 days with her and her husband, and she said at the end, she really enjoyed being away with us because she didn't feel like she had to be a tourist and do a lot of things. So we all in different ways, we have these scripts in our head, these should lists. And so it's good to question those, whether it's I should take the rubbish out today or tomorrow, or whatever our should is, just say, why should I? Why? And see what happens.
Well, I remember in another incarnation when I was a primary school teacher, and I was constantly struggling with that. And I had a very good friend who'd been a teacher for about 15 years and was moved into working in a special needs school and doing all kinds of other stuff. But you know, I would talk with her and get support from her, and she just said, you just have to accept that actually the job is undoable. You know, even if you had much more time, you would never get all the things done that you needed to get done. So you have to be a bit selective on where you put your energy in and what's the most important, you know. And I think that I kind of learned to do that a bit more in teaching, but I think that's a pattern and a habit. And I'm aware that I brought that into, you know, being chair of the Buddhist Center, and I'm having to rethink how I do everything as well, because I've got very much into doing mode. Paradoxically, I mean, obviously there's times I'm on retreat or meditating, but there's so much stuff to do all the time, you know. And particularly one of my habits is, if I can see stuff needs to be done and there's not anybody else to do it, then I feel that I have to do it. But actually, I don't, you know. And I think maybe other people might have something similar going on sometimes. And I've always liked the concept of laziness, Buddhist concept of laziness, which actually the Tibetans were very like calling it Western laziness, that when they came over, they were really shocked about, you know, about some of the things about how Westerners were in their lives and approached their practice. But one of the things they said is that they're so lazy because they spend all their time running around doing things that aren't important, and they don't give themselves enough time for the things that are really meaningful, you know. So I think that's something to sort of like reflect on as well, like how much of our time is spent being busy with stuff that isn't so important, isn't so meaningful, and how much time do we allow for the stuff that is important, or if we don't even know what's important, to allow space for that to emerge in us, to get in touch with what is important for us, to listen to ourselves more deeply. Anyways, anything you wanted to add, Maitri Pushpa? Okay. Well, why don't we do a bit of practice? And from what we've been talking about, I'm thinking about maybe doing a little bit of mindfulness of sounds, and I'll just play a little bit on the bowls. You'll have other sounds happening around you as well. Because we can have different objects of meditation, and we can be thinking, oh, I must be trying to be kind, I must be trying to be aware, I must be trying to be more grounded, and whatever else. But if you can just, you know, open out to sounds coming and going, noticing your responses or reactions. Yeah. So hang on a minute while I get, because I wasn't planning on doing this, I just have to. Okay, yeah, so if you feel like lying down, that might be something, just relax, or just sitting. And sound is quite interesting to have a sort of like an awareness or object, an anchor for our awareness, because just like the breath, it's always happening right now. You can't be aware of a sound that hasn't happened yet. And you can't be aware of a sound that happened a while ago. You know, you might have a memory of it. You know, we have earworms, and maybe you can replay a song or a piece of music in your head. I can do that quite often, a whole quartet or an opera or something. But that's not the same as actually hearing it in the moment, being present in the moment, yeah? And we're all in our own individual spaces, so there will be sounds around you, presumably in the rooms you're in, as well as any sounds coming over the virtual Wi-Fi space. And can we just allow sounds to come to us and allow sounds to be just sounds? There's a famous teaching of the Buddha, in the herd, in the seen, only the seen, in the heard, only the heard, in the cognized, only the cognized, it begins. And there's something about, can we just allow those sounds just to be the sounds? So Maitri Pushpa earlier was talking about mirror-like wisdom, and we'll be exploring that more this evening. But the whole thing about that image symbol of a mirror is that when something comes into the mirror's field of vision, it gets reflected back accurately, just how it is. There's not things that are left out. There's not things that are added on. It just shows you what's there, you know? Whereas we often like to add our thoughts, our interpretations and all kinds of things, and our responses and reactions onto our any experience. So can we just allow sound to be sound? And if we are reacting, just notice that as part of the flow of our experience. And also noticing silence, an absence of sound. What happens when a sound ends? There's always layers of sounds, that's evolving soundscape around us. Some sounds here and then gone, some almost continuous, some recurring. So there'll be the sound of the bells. There won't be the sound of my voice because I'm going to stop talking any minute. So just be open, see what happens. preparing to end this meditation, this mindfulness of self, checking in with where you are right now, body, heart, mind. An ending in your own way, your own time. A gentle transition. Maybe part of that can be listening to the sounds in the room or outside the room. Opening your eyes. Noticing what's in your field of vision. Particularly that sense of inhabiting your body, wherever you are right now, the space you're taking up in the world. And your contact with the ground. If you need to move, position, or just do some movements in your body, just listening to what your body needs. Okay, so we're going to end this session very shortly. So maybe connecting to the other people here, sharing this space with us. Even if we're in our own personal space, we have been doing a shared practice and there is a connection there. And we're with people who we'll be spending the next couple of days with, practicing, maybe being in groups with. But even if we don't say anything, we can still feel ourselves supported by the others. And the fact that we are co-creating this space of practice on this retreat. So our next session is 7 o'clock this evening till 8:30, which I'll be leading. And I'll be saying a little bit more about Akshobhya, dark blue Buddha of the East and his mirror-like wisdom. And we'll be doing a bit more meditation and we'll be doing some devotional practice as well. So certainly some chanting and a bit of ritual. Probably simple ritual tonight. It'd be lovely to see you if you can make it. Otherwise, we'll be back here at 10:30 tomorrow. And if you want to post anything in the chat, do feel free. If you want to slip away quietly, feel free. Or if you want to unmute and say something, that's fine too.